Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, April 9th, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Every Monday, live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are all archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.FM.
And today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we've got a great show for you today that's going to include cutting-edge treatment for stroke.
And dietary artificial trans fats are linked to aggression.
And what's bankrupting our healthcare system, really? It may not be what you think.
A low-calcium diet actually promotes kidney stones.
And cruciferous vegetables are linked to breast cancer survival. Plus, if you want to join us in our conversation and have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
Although having a stroke can be devastating, there are now cutting-edge strategies that can help more than conventional medicine. So tell us about some of these transcranial direct current stimulations.
Well, you know, there are a lot of new things on the horizon, Vicki, and this is one of them. And it's kind of interesting because all they really do here is they put a direct current, not AC current, but direct current. It's a low voltage, and they lit on for about 20 minutes over the brain, and it seems to do things that causes changes that are positive for about 6 to 12 months. So we're looking at things like
memory and speech and mathematics.
Exactly. And that's just one thing that's on the horizon. I think what we need to do is we need to look at what causes stroke first and then look at some of the potential things we could do for rehabbing that are kind of interesting. First of all, most strokes are caused by clots. I'd say 85 or 90% of them are. And those clots can come from either the arteriosclerotic process itself, which is most often in the carotid arteries of the neck, where if there's an ulcer there and clot forms and it tends to break off or a piece of plaque breaks off, it can go and it can lodge itself into a blood vessel where it can't go any further and obstruct flow.
Another thing that we often worry about with atrial fibrillation is getting a stroke.
Absolutely. And those clots form in the heart, in the atrium of the heart, usually the left atrium, and they can pop out as well, and they can jump into the cerebral circulation, and they can cause strokes as well. So can things like trauma and tumors and prolonged seizures. So what we do in general is we look for things like physical therapy to try and work on rehabilitation or use anticoagulation. There's a lot of new anticoagulants everybody's talking about that I think are totally on the wrong track. In fact, most of the medicines that are used, in my opinion, are aggressive and dangerous. And
well, many of them can have side effects, like osteoporosis, for one thing.
Well, if you're on Coumadin, osteoporosis is a big deal. And you can run into other kinds of problems as well, just from bleeding. A lot of people get bleeding strokes, and those are really dynamite to change. Or they can cause other problems, bleeding in other places in the body. So it's not the best way to go. And there's so many wonderful ways that we can look at live blood cell analysis that tells us whether or not our treatment is effective. So using things that will thin blood out, like nattokinase, which is a soy product that is a powerful anticoagulant, or lumbrokinase, which is actually derived from earthworms as a powerful anticoagulant.
Fish oil, too.
Fish oil is a good way to go to some extent. So these approaches are really beautiful in trying to get the anticoagulation you want, and the catcher is that you can use a live blood cell analysis approach to see if it's working.
How do people find live blood cell analysis, though? Because most mainstream doctors don't order it.
Well, they don't even know what it is and haven't got a clue of what you can learn from it. You know, it's kind of odd that in Western medicine what we do is we use these technologies that everybody's accustomed to, which is to look at at blood that's been dried and killed, okay, on a slide, and then stain it with certain kinds of stains to show certain effects that we can see. And true enough, you can get some valuable information from that. that. But if you want to see blood in the living state and see what it does, all you got to do is stick it under a dark field microscope at 8,000 power. And let me tell you, you can see everything.
Well, you can see the blood cells moving all around and what their pattern is and if they're clumping together or not.
Exactly. You can look and see what the white cells look like and see if they're active and if your immune system is working as it should. You can see what the platelets look like and see if there's fibrin, which is what tends to make blood clot.
And
see if it's there, too.
Even if there's parasites in it.
That and cancer cells. You see all kinds of interesting things that Western medicine is just kind of ignored.
So where would the average person go to get this done?
Well, you have to find somebody who's an expert, and it's going to be somebody who does complementary and alternative medicine. It's not going to be in the mainstream.
Like here in California, we use somebody that's a biophysicist.
Well, somebody with a PhD in biophysics who's had a lot of experience. It's published 100 papers in the medical literature that's world renowned for her work. That's Beverly Rubick, who's an amazing lady. And I send a lot of my patients to investigate that. We do it in a way that makes it legal because you have to do a research trial, actually, to be able to do that. And that's, what we're doing.
So in other areas, people would do like a Google, I guess.
Well, you might have to. You put live blood cell analysis and put your area and see what comes up. That might be one way to do it.
Well, there are also other things that can be helpful for treatment for a stroke, like acupuncture.
You know, that's one of the things that's really overlooked, and it does some clear things that are valuable. You want to get some return on function, you can speed it up by doing acupuncture on people. And then there are things that have to do with nutrition that we don't look at that I think are key points. When the brain is not functioning properly, particularly in the area around the infarct, it's called the peri-infarction area. That's the area where you have a limited amount of blood flow, but not enough. So the tissues don't get what they really need in terms of nutrients because there's just not enough blood flow to deliver them. You can change the metabolism around so that instead of depending on sugar, on glucose for metabolism, you can give fats, saturated fats like coconut oil, and the body will turn that into ketone bodies, which can be used by the brain for energy. That's why it's such a wonderful way for people who have Parkinson's or Alzheimer's disease or people who've had a stroke to try and get some return on function. And then add things like curcumin and choline and niacinamide and B12 and essential fatty acids. All those things will help with the nutrition of the brain.
Another thing that can be very helpful is neurofeedback.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing. That's like an electroencephalogram. You put electrodes on the brain, and then you use high-frequency radio waves as a biofeedback tool. It's kind of interesting because nobody really knows how that works, but when you feed back the brain high-frequency radio waves in very low dosages, what happens is it's like pushing the reset button on your computer. All of a sudden, the brain that's scrambled and not doing well will start functioning again right. And if you do that over a period of a few weeks to months, you can see tremendous improvement in things like ADD in some kids or people who have had head trauma or people with strokes, a whole lot of things that normally we don't have much to use.
It seems like they should have some of these tools in the rehab centers for people that have had strokes.
Oh, for sure. I mean, these are things that are on the cutting edge of where we're going that we should be doing a lot more to try and support because they work.
Does near-infrared light help with treating the stroke?
There's a lot of data on that, Vicki, out there now that's actually quite shocking. If you give low-dose infrared light at the right wavelength, you can see changes that will work on the peri-infarction area, the area around the stroke that is not functioning well but not yet dead. And what you do is as soon as that infrared light hits a blood vessel wall, it causes a release instantly of nitric oxide, much like nitroglycerin does in the heart when you put it under your tongue if you've got angina, and causes those blood vessels to pop open and delivers a lot more flow. It also is converted by the mitochondria, the energy packets of the cell, into ATP, which is the energy currency of the cell. So ATP to a cell is like gasoline is to a car. It gives you all that energy that you need to be able to do the work, and it's especially important if you're in that peri-infarction area where there's a limitation in blood flow. It reduces inflammation. It increases lymphatic drainage if there's congestion there. And so what we're seeing is return of function, even down the road, months to years, in people who've had a stroke. So this is a no-brainer. With the research showing what it does, this is something we should be bringing into clinical practice. There's no downside to it.
Also, if you've had a stroke or somebody close to you has had a stroke, it's a good idea to try to stay away from certain medications, because there are a lot of them, like sedatives and antidepressants mm-hmm. and antihistamines and anticholinergics, that can compromise your brain function, compromise the central nervous system.
Yeah, well, it's just the silliest thing in the world to be thinking that you can use drugs, okay, that compromise nerve cell metabolism and think that that's going to be a good thing to do, especially in somebody who's already compromised. What you're going to do is magnify things. And we have a whole section on the drsaputo.com site. If people will put anticholinergics in the search box and Alzheimer's disease, you'll see things come up that'll kind of surprise you.
So what are anticholinergic drugs?
Well, those are drugs that tend to reduce the production of acetylcholine. And acetylcholine is a major neurotransmitter in the brain that's important for its function.
So when are people usually given an anticholinergic drug?
Well, sometimes for sleep, you know, Benadryl would be one. There are a whole lot of drugs that are used to help you urinate better. There are hundreds of drugs that if you do what I just told you, put that in the search box, you'll get a nice presentation on that. And, of course, one of the most important things is lifestyle. We should really pay attention to the way we live our life. The things that tend to help people who have lost brain function is to use it so that we can take advantage of the neuroplasticity of the brain, which means that we thought that nerve cells couldn't adapt much, couldn't regrow. We couldn't get new ones there, but now we know we can. The modern research that we've done on that shows that that's a really powerful way to get brain function back. So
that gives people a lot of hope.
Well, it should. A stroke is a terrible thing. I don't want to minimize it. And a transient ischemic attack, which is the warning of a stroke, where you don't walk right, talk right, or see right in some way that lasts for anywhere from a few minutes to a few hours, is a warning sign that should give you kind of the idea that flow is compromised here. We should do something about changing our metabolism and changing our lifestyle.
People need to pay attention to that. Many times, you know, you have a little episode like that and it goes away and you think, oh, I don't know what that was, but I guess it's okay. It went away.
Yeah, see, this is a time when I think it's really important to do a live blood cell analysis. If you've got a problem with a compromise in flow, it could be because you're popping off little pieces of clot from your heart, if it's atrial fibrillation, or from your neck, if you've got carotid artery problems there. And that could be the problem. And you want to be able to see if you have hypercoagulation, you know, a tendency to coagulate that's increased, because that's the time when you're going to see these things magnified. So that's where your live blood cell analysis is wonderful. So I would say that would be something that would be urgent. You know, you want to go to your doctor for sure, and what they're going to do is put you on aspirin. And I'd have to say, in the acute setting, aspirin's fine. You know, it's okay, but it's not my choice.
And not for every day.
No, not at all, because it causes ulcers and other things that can be real problems. Well, and you get the same benefit from these medicines that are herbal supplements that are far more effective and safer.
And if a person has clots breaking off from their carotid artery, the doctor's probably going to want to do a carotid ultrasound and probably an arteriogram and maybe go in there and scrape all that out. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, it could be life-saving, but there's a 2-3% of those people who go through a surgical procedure that come out not very well, either dying or having major effects from a stroke.
So it's better to wait till you have symptoms to have that done?
Well, that's actually surprisingly true, Vicki. You would think that being proactive by early detection would be a smart thing to do, but it's been shown that with the carotid ultrasound, that's not true. If you have a transient ischemic attack, that's different. Now you've had a warning sign that something's going on. But if you just have a little sound in your artery called a bruit, which gives you a doctor the notice that there's probably a blockage there of some sort, doing an ultrasound is not something that will actually save lives or save morbidity most of the time. We all used to think, well, how could you go wrong? But the way you can go wrong is you start doing extra tests. Next thing you do is, you're doing an arteriogram. and a certain percentage of those people are going to have a clot, or if they have turn out to have a procedure, which maybe they didn't need. You know, if they say there's a blockage of 50 or 75%, which would not be, in general terms, enough to do a surgery. But if you had a little bit more and you did the surgery, I mean, you may have the complications of the surgery with no benefits. So it's counterintuitive, but that's what the data shows. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Talk about milk, because a lot of people don't know that there is contamination in conventional milk, and what it is sort of disgusting. But when you're drinking milk, you're actually drinking pus cells.
And well, that's part of the reason why they pasteurize it, Vicki, is it helps at least to kill some of those cells so you can't get infected. And, of course, that wrecks the milk.
Well, they figure that there's 750,000 pus cells per every cc of pasteurized milk. Well, a cc is not very much.
No.
I mean, that's not even as much as what usually an injection is. So conventional pasteurized milk might contain up to, if you have a glass of it, up to 180 million of these pus cells. They're also called somatic cells if you don't like the word pus, but I mean, it kind of gets the point across. I mean, what we're talking about is what you would find in a pimple.
Uh-huh.
That's, you know, what that is.
Right.
And they're the result of infection in dairy cows, and they're caused by the unsanitary dairy operating conditions that lead to infected mammary glands of the cows.
Right.
And in 2011, the dairy industry debated lowering the allowable level of these somatic cells to 450,000 per cc. But, you know, it chose to keep the levels at 750,000, allowing for more infections and more of this pus in the pasteurized milk that's sold at all the grocery stores. Well, the Consumer Wellness Center actually calculated that a typical milk mustache might contain as many as 2 million of these cells. And all these celebrities are allowing their images, you know, to be used by the processed dairy industry, they're literally showing their faces smeared with you know what. So maybe that'll change some of your habits. I remember years ago somebody commenting to me, I was having milk with something, and she made some comment about that there was a lot of pus in the milk, and I, you know, chose to not really think about that. But organic milk is substantially cleaner, and they use more humane practices also of the certified organic raw dairy producers. So the raw dairy industry is under assault in America, and actually what they've done is they've had armed government agencies in California, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania that have conducted violent raids on raw milk producers, and they destroyed their milk inventory, and they charged them with felony crimes for producing and distributing raw milk.
That's unbelievable.
So it's a political sort of a thing. And what I want to bring to your attention also is conventional pasteurized milk contains growth hormones and antibiotics and pesticides. So instead of cleaning up the practices in the dairy farms, what they're doing is just giving them antibiotics so that they can continue with that. And you know that pasteurized milk is known to kill a calf if you give it to a calf.
Well, it takes weeks to do, but you're right.
And look at what we're doing.
The
yeah.
things that we do to our food is unbelievable. We destroy the living nature of what's in food by heat or by some kind of pasteurization process or sterilization in some other way. Sometimes we use x-rays, and it's just the silliest thing to do. If we really take care in what we do by raising our cows, okay, in a way that's healthy, and we make sure that we're giving them plenty of attention so they don't have infections in their udders, raw milk is a wonderful thing for almost everybody.
We're making it dead milk, pasteurized.
Well, that's right. And there are some people who shouldn't consume raw milk. I'd say somebody who's immunocompromised, probably better off just not using milk products.
And a lot of these ads for conventional milk are talking about, you know, making claims about how it makes you have strong bones. And pasteurized dead milk has never been approved by the FDA to treat fragile bones. And we know that calcium alone doesn't build strong bones. You have to have a balance of other nutrients and mm-hmm. things. But it's not even the best source of calcium. So if you eat raw almonds and you eat leafy green vegetables, those are better sources. And just remember that pasteurization destroys the digestive enzymes as well, which is what's probably making people more allergic and making it more difficult to digest. And that might explain why so many people suffer from lactose intolerance and digestive disorders and sinus congestion and acne and all that. So anyway, think before you have a glass of milk and when you have your cappuccino. I was thinking it might be a good idea to buy those small containers, at least of organic milk, and take it with you and have them foam that up if you want to have a cappuccino when you're out.
Well, you got a good point there, Vicki. Thanks for that tip. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Denise from Manhattan. Hi, Denise.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. What's up?
I'm just wondering, I visited a doctor out in Pennsylvania, and he said I have some kind of obstruction with my veins in my neck or my head. I had some surgery, maxillofacial surgery, about almost 20 years ago, and he said that he thinks this is, I guess, maybe the cause. And he recommended that I go out to this center in Las Vegas. They have some special program, but the cost is not optional for me right now. It's about $4,000. Uh-huh. Is there something that I can do in the meanwhile to help myself?
Well, first of all, I don't understand exactly what you have. When you say you have veins in your head, that you mean veins or arteries to start with?
I guess the arteries. That he said that they're obstructed. He said I have really low acetylcholine in my brain. He does energy testing, the ART testing.
So did he do a carotid ultrasound on you, a test where they put sound device on your neck?
That would be the program in Las Vegas. They do special MRI imaging and all these other tests.
Well, I don't know why you couldn't see a good doctor in Manhattan who could do that. I mean, there are most any radiologist can do carotid ultrasound. And if there's really something abnormal there because of a previous surgery you had, and there's a question about blood flow, that would be something where you'd get a better answer. And to do what's called an MRA, which is an MRI where you inject dye at the same time, would be something that could explain it even further. But, you know, earlier in the show, we talked about how doing carotid ultrasounds as a screening test isn't a good idea. You should have symptoms first, although if your situation's a bit different and you've had a surgical procedure on that in the past, it may be a different story. But I don't see any reason why you'd have to go to Las Vegas to do that. If you want to put more information together and send me an email at Dr. Len, that's DRLEN, at Dr. Saputo, SAPUTO.com, I'll be happy to look into it a little more deeply for you.
Okay, thank you so much for your help.
Okay, thanks for calling, Denise. Yeah, good luck with it.
Be well.
All right, bye-bye. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. We have a call from John with a question about a blood clot in his leg. Are you there, John?
Yes, I am. I have a DVD in the right leg.
Uh-huh.
My right leg. And it's the second, well, you know, they always say which leg. This is my second one in about 3 years, and I'm on Coumadin.
Wow.
I believe 4 milligrams a day.
Okay.
And I'm afraid of the side effects of Coumadin because I'd like to naturally get into some type of homeopathic cure like I've heard that sweet onions and garlic, but I'm afraid to stop the Coumadin.
Yeah, well, you can't just do it that simply, but I agree with your general thinking. I think the first thing to do is find out why do you have blood clots that form in your leg? Do you know the reason?
Well, I'm 6'1", used to be 6'2", but I'm 70 years of age, lost 1 inch in height. But I used to be 220, but then I had a pancreatitis, and it caused me to lose 20 pounds. So I'm thinking maybe weight could be a factor. I'm dropped down to 200 now because I'm watching my diet, no alcohol and really cutting back on all sweets and stuff. And then I think I might be prone to varicose veins because of my height is in my legs. And when I'm sitting down, people think I'm about 5'8". Then I stand up and go, my God, you're how tall are you? And I say, well, I'm 6'1".
Do you stand up?
I don't think that being tall or having long legs has anything to do with this. There's usually a reason for why blood is thick. And you should see somebody like a hematologist maybe to start with to find out what's going on there. And another thing I would consider is doing a live blood cell analysis, which Vicki and I have been talking about earlier, because this can be a very powerful way of seeing if the blood itself is clotting. The Coumadin is one way to do it, but it, as you just said, it's a dangerous thing to do because over time, what that's going to do is deplete your body of vitamin K, set the stage for osteoporosis, set the stage for heart attacks and aortic calcification within just a couple of years. So there are real reasons for not doing this, and most doctors don't even know this. If Julian Whitaker did some wonderful work on it, we've got an article by him on our website at drsaputo.com that talks about vitamin K. And if you put vitamin K in the search box, what will come up is all the information that I've just explained to you in much more detail that's in a video that's about 5 minutes long. The treatment for you, I would be hesitant to give you advice because, first of all, I'm not your doctor. And second, I don't really have all the information that I should have about you to know what would be the best treatment. But some of the things that would be considerations would be natokinase or lumbrokinase. Fish oil would certainly be one. And those are approaches that I would look into in conjunction with what I've already told you. So you've got work to do there, John, and I hope you can find someone who can help you with it wherever you are.
Okay, I'll get on that fish oil. That's one word I did understand.
Well, I would not tell you to go off your Coumadin. I'm not giving you advice.
No, I didn't say. I just meant I'm going to start the fish oil, then I'm going to go back and tell the doctor what is some alternative ways that I can go and get away from the Coumadin, because just common sense tells me that I think it might be detrimental to my health as time goes by.
It is, but keep in mind that so are blood clots, okay? And if one goes to your lung and you have a pulmonary embolus, it could be fatal. So you've got an issue here that needs to be worked up by someone who understands this and brings it to a better resolution.
Okay, well, thank you for taking the time and patience with me.
Nice to talk to you, John. Have a great day.
Bye.
The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Soputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after a short station break. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Soputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
We all know that dietary trans fats aren't healthy. And now they've found that consumption of dietary trans fats are associated with irritability and aggression. And there's evidence that trans fats adversely affect our ability to create the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids that are favorable for our brain. And there are studies that show that these omega-3 fatty acids are associated with increased agreeableness and reduced impulsivity. So let's start with what's the difference between manufactured and natural trans fats, because usually the labels don't distinguish what kind of a trans fat.
Yeah, well, I think in general what you can do is you can assume that trans fats are bad for you. When they're found in nature, they tend not to be nearly as dangerous, and the vaccinic acid that's in meat and dairy products actually can lower LDL and raise HDL and lower triglycerides and the lower total cholesterol. So it's not like they're automatically not good, but when you hydrogenate, okay, in a biochemical process, the fats that are in our body or the fats that we're going to be using to prepare, it makes them negative in terms of what they'll do for
us. Usually it's done to polyunsaturated fats, right?
Exactly. And it's only the partially hydrogenated vegetable oils that are the problem. If you fully saturate it, now you've got the problem of not a trans fat anymore, it's a saturated fat. So when that label says partially hydrogenated vegetable oils, you know that's a bad idea. And of course, when they're using bad oils in general, which almost always is the case when you look at the manufacturing process, because healthy oils are so expensive, you really don't want to consume those products.
I want to encourage people to get into the habit of reading the ingredients on whatever you buy that's in a package. So
absolutely,
it's not enough to just read the label. You have to read the ingredients. However, sometimes they say zero trans fats, and actually, legally, they can still have trans fats in it anyway. I think.
Oh, it's actually a lot, Vicki. You'd be surprised.
But what you want to look for in the ingredients is to see if there's anything that says partially hydrogenated, because that's the
key. That's the clue. But even if it says zero is in there, they make a statement that says zero. It is zero. It says it really means that less than 1 gram per tablespoon is trans fat. So you're looking to up to 7% of what's in there being like that. So when you are looking at something that says zero trans fat, if they've pointed out that there's none there, you can bet that there could be some. And all it takes is about 3.5 grams a day, which is easy to do with, quote, zero trans fat consumption. And what that does is it causes all these problems we're talking about with aggression.
So if you see on a package something that says partially hydrogenated fats in it, or partially hydrogenated oils, just drop that like a hot potato.
Exactly. That's for sure. In the study that was done, they had 945 patients aged 45 to 69 that were consuming 3.5 grams of trans fats a day, and that's when they noticed, as they looked at aggression and life history of aggression and impatience and irritability, that the more trans fats that people ate, the worse the symptoms were. So what we've got here is something that we need to really pay attention to, because it's a big deal.
The reason that they add these partially hydrogenated oils, these trans fats, to products, it's usually for the consistency of it, but so that it'll last longer on the shelf, that it'll keep longer. So when you see like packaged cookies or packaged whatever it happens
to
be.
Yeah, then it's easier to use as well, too.
Yeah, so. And then if it's got oils in it, they're not going to melt out of it when the weather gets warm in the store or something. It'll just keep that consistency that they want, and it'll preserve it longer.
Right, so once again, our FDA has let us down. It's not doing the job it should to protect us, and here we are. Okay, so it's what we have here is a call from Harvey. So, Harvey, are you on the line?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Lennon, Nurse Vicki. Can you hear me?
I can. What's up?
Well, first of all, I have a question, but first I'd like to talk about the CaliforniaNuclearInitiative.com that I mentioned last time. And it has until April 16th to collect over 500,000 signatures of California voters, people who live in California. And that's to close the San Onofre and the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plants, which are in big danger. They're always telling us the big one's coming, and we don't want a Fukushima-like disaster here. So that's the CaliforniaNuclearInitiative.com. Sign on and save California from total nuclear disaster. But the question I had from you was about something called sticky blood. My friend told me that sugar causes blood platelets and fat inside the blood, the arterial wall, to stick together. And when they stick together, they go through the heart as a clump, and that gives you like a heart attack. So if you're not eating sugar, there's a better chance that these things go through the heart and they don't clump up and become dangerous. So is that true?
Well, what it'll do is it'll increase your triglyceride levels, and that will cause blood to be a little bit more sticky. I don't think it's a dramatic effect, but it's certainly not something I'd advise for any reason anyway. So when you're talking about sugar, or particularly high fructose corn syrup, bad idea. I'm with you, Harvey.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And CaliforniaNuclearInitiative.com for Save California.
All right. Thanks for calling, Harvey. It's good to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
All right. The lines are open. And you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuter here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And it's time for Vicki's 2020 tip.
Well, our pesticides are making our bees sick. Actually, they're killing off our bees. And the Environmental Protection Agency approved GMO insecticides responsible for killing off the bees and contaminating our entire food chain. Now, this new study confirmed that something called clofianidin, actually, there's a lot more. There's some other ones, too.
There are about seven of them
in
that family.
It's under the neonicotinoid.
Uh-huh. That's right.
But I'm not going to say the names of them anymore because I don't think anybody's going to remember them anyway.
That's
they're
right.
sort of hard to pronounce.
Right.
But anyway, it's killing off the bees. And also, the toxicity is systemic throughout the entire food chain. And it's one day could actually lead to destroying our food chain. And the Public Library of Science discovered that these insecticides persist in extremely high levels in planter exhaust material that's produced during the planting of the crops treated with these insecticides. And this runs contrary to the industry claims that the chemicals biodegrade and that they're not a threat. So this is kind of scary. But I guess there's things that we can do about it. There are some petitions and things that are out there right now that help so that people can take action against this, because we don't want to be suspending. We want to suspend these neonicotinoids, and the bees pollinating these agricultural crops are really important. And some of them are like almonds and so forth, you know.
Oh, there are a lot of them.
A lot of them. But anyway, so there are things that people can do by making sure that the legislators and people like that are aware that we don't want this happening. Yeah, I was noticing last week I was taking a walk and all the trees were in bloom and it was such a beautiful spring day.
Yeah.
And I went to see if they smelled and I thought, oh, I better be careful because they're usually full of bees. And I didn't see one bee.
Yeah, well, see, that's what colony collapse disorder is all about, and France, you know, has banned the use of this, and Germany is in the process of going back and forth because they know that it's not a good idea. So this whole business of adding pesticides once again is a huge problem that could have profound effects.
And the problem is that a lot of these pesticide corporations like Bayer, uh-huh. they're having defenses against this. You know, they're trying to create
business.
Doubt and so forth.
Well, they don't care.
And they keep putting it off, so nothing's being done about it.
They're just interested in the bottom line for them, which is what? Return on investment. It's about dollars. So the conflicts of interest are terrible. And the EPA, you know, should step up and do something to make absolutely clear that this is a terrible thing to do, which they're trying to do. But the FDA is deaf, and it's the same old story. FDA is so conflicted, it's now something that should be removed. And an FDA that does something should be reinstilled that actually does something to protect the people. Same thing with the CDC. These government organizations are so corrupt now that they've become a negative thing in general, and I think we should start over again.
Well, they've just been putting this off for way too long. Well, the Sarah Club is up in arms about this also.
Well, should be. I mean, we should be up in arms about it, too, because what happens if we lose bees? I mean, we lose the pollinators that allow a lot of our produce and vegetables and fruits to no longer be able to be developed.
And without these bees that are dying off, I mean, one-third or more of our food supply will be destroyed, and that will include at least 100 varieties of fruits and vegetables that rely on bees for pollination.
So. That's a big deal. That's a great tip, Vicki. Thank you very much. The lines are open. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
So what's bankrupting our healthcare system?
Well,
you know, we're going to be talking about some forms of corruption that, if addressed immediately, could actually save us billions of dollars a year. And we know how to fix the problem, according to this Dr. Mike Smith from the Life Extension magazine.
Uh-huh. These are good people, Vicki.
Yeah. Well, the question is, will we fix the problem? And for one, what does Dr. Smith say about skyrocketing drug prices?
Well, he says a whole bunch of things that I think are really good points, and I want to support him and the Life Extension people. But they're looking at it from a very narrow perspective that I'll tell you about in a minute. But first of all, what they're talking about are three things. One are skyrocketing drug prices. The other is that we tend to practice reactive medicine instead of preventive medicine. And then, of course, we've got an FDA that doesn't serve us well. And those are all big factors that we need to pay attention to, for sure. I mean, the problem of skyrocketing drug prices, we all know about. I mean, the $500 billion of sales every year is no small thing. And they're out to do what? It's return on investment again. And the problem is that if we don't have good business, these people aren't interested in being making their products.
I think we need to make people aware, though, of these lawsuits that are going on.
Well, the lawsuits you're talking about have to do that they're frivolous lawsuits where the drug company that has patents, okay, against or for certain drugs, they expire. And when they do, generic companies come along and they produce the same product for about one, you know, and sell it for about one-tenth the cost sometimes. And so what the patent-holding company will do is they'll file a frivolous lawsuit that does what? It delays the ability of the generic drug company to be able to come out with its products. And when that happens, of course, they make extra money for every single day that their product remains out on the market. And in addition, it jacks up the price of the generic drug. Because what happens is you have more fees that are going into legal expenses that have to be passed along to the buyer. So it's a very clever way for Big Pharma to sustain its profits for a longer period of time. And, of course, it means more money to us.
Drugs now are costing more.
Exactly. And then they talked about reactive medicine. We wait till somebody's sick before we do anything. We almost expect to get sick. And then we go to the doctor. And what happens is we have all these drugs and technologies we use to try and block symptoms and keep people from feeling bad.
So it's reactive versus proactive.
Yeah, what we should be doing is disease prevention. So I agree with Michael Smith and the Life Extension people that this is a great thing to do. It's just to shift the paradigm. If you want real health care reform, what you should be doing is looking at how you're going to shift from disease care to health care. And that means, of course, more prevention. And then the question about the FDA being a failure, everybody knows. The corruption there is a joke. Well, we've got people from Big Pharma who are on FDA panels who have votes that will make the difference of whether or not a drug will pass or not.
So they're fast-tracking drugs.
They fast-track them as well, which means they bring them to market faster, and the pharmaceutical industry pays a lot of money for it, but it's worth it for them. But the real bottom line is it pays for about one-third of the budget of the FDA. So now the FDA basically has one-third of the say of what's going to happen with what the FDA policy is, because they need the money. So what we have here is a stupid system that doesn't make much sense. Congress has refused to take a position on it because they're owned by who? The corporations of America and in large part Big Pharma. I mean, these are the things they're talking about.
That's why we talk about revolving doors.
Well, exactly, between the FDA, the CDC, and Big Pharma, because they basically are getting their way. Now, I think these are important factors to consider. Don't get me wrong, but I think it's short-sighted. And I think what we should be doing is looking at what are we doing? Are we trying to just fight against things that are wrong and stop them? And the answer to that is yes, we should do that, no question. But you're not going to solve this problem really by legislation. What you're going to do is fight. And over time, you're really not going to get people to make changes unless you pressure them. And there's always going to be people looking for loopholes and ways to change it. And that's why we have an ongoing fight that will never stop. So what we need is inspiration. We need to change ourselves. We need to be the change we want to see ourselves, like Gandhi said, so that what we can do is rectify these things, do what's right, and make sure that we've got issues that are really important for us. So good idea, but we need to evolve ourselves. We need to do the work. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Cassandra from Atlanta. Hi, Cassandra.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's up?
Well, what has happened is that mid-January, I took a fall on my tailbone, and I clean houses for a living. And a month later, when I was getting healed, I went to the physical doctor for an annual checkup, and I came out smelling wonderfully, except that I pulled my groin on the doctor's table because they hadn't lifted the leg lift when he told me to lay down. And now I have been going through since mid-February a lot of pain and doing a lot of research. So I'm wondering what kinds of things to get to supplement the healing of groin injuries and lower back pain that I've never had in my life. And being as I clean houses, I've got to really work my body planning
well,
to be healing.
There are definitely things you could do. Do you have any fractures of your tailbone? Do you know that?
Nothing. Thank God, no.
Okay,
nothing
so what
like
you
that.
Have are soft tissue injuries, and there are a lot of good ways to do that. A good
right.
body worker, a massage therapist who is skilled at this would be great. Physical therapy could help it a lot. A good chiropractor is a great way to do it. Substances like DMSO, which is dimethyl sulfoxide, that's why we call it DMSO, nobody can say it, would be great to put on it several times a day. And by the way, this is not advice, this is information, because you're not my patient, and I can't give you advice, but I can give you information to talk about. And the really most powerful thing to do that would be very useful for you would be infrared light therapy. So if you can find somebody who does something called photonic stimulation, which is using a frequency of light that's usually at about 870 nanometers in the infrared spectrum, this can cause dramatic changes in just two or three treatments that could make a huge difference in how you feel. So if you can find somebody who does that, that would be smart. If you want to learn more about it, my suggestion is go to my website at Dr. Saputo. That's Dr. spelled out. Saputo, SAPUTO.com, and put infrared light therapy in the search box, and all this information in audio and video will come up. And so that's a good way for you to learn about it. And then maybe you can find somebody locally who does this treatment for you. It would be dramatic.
Some people are also helped by acupuncture.
Yeah, acupuncture can help as well.
And what do you think about heat or ice?
Well, I think it's what works. Generally, if you have a nerve that's involved, ice is the best thing to do. And if you have a muscle that's involved, heat is the best thing to do. But I always tell people to do what makes them feel better. Although, generally, if you have an acute injury, you want to use ice. And if you have a longer injury, oftentimes heat is what you want to use. So you've got a lot of options there, Cassandra. Thanks for calling.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you for
better.
Your time.
Okay, bye-bye. The lines are open. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Pam from New Jersey. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Dr. Saputo. Thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show. I have to say I am your biggest fan.
Well, thank you. Tell your friends.
I do. I tell everybody.
Thank you. So how can we help you?
Well, I'm going to be in a car accident, and I have, some back injuries and neck injuries, and I have a lot of inflammation going on. I have tendonitis in my hand and carpal tunnel. They said that could be due from the accident, and also plantar fasciitis. And so I have a lot of pain going on throughout my body, and I heard about, I think it's called prolozone therapy, and I was wondering if you knew anything about that. I know it involves ozone therapy and some nutrients and stuff, and I wonder if you have an opinion about that, and also any other recommendations that you know, for pain in general and those type of pains in particular.
Sure. First of all, prolozone is a contracture of two different kinds of treatment. One is proliferative therapy, where what you do is inject things either that have saline or sugar in them into areas of the body where the joints are loose. And what they do is they tend to tighten them up. So it's like the hinge on a door that if it's too loose, every time you open it, it goes out of place and you've got to get it back in place with a chiropractor or whatever. And the prolotherapy, the proliferative therapy that is done by injection into those ligaments, will tighten those hinges on the door so they stay intact. The ozone part is a great anti-inflammatory way to reduce inflammation. And this is an okay thing to do for what you're talking about. But the advice I just gave Cassandra really fits for you, too, just like a shoe. Because what you want to do is use the infrared light therapy and maybe some DMSO, dimethyl sulfoxide. But again, under the supervision of your doctor, because I'm not your doctor and I can't give you I can't offer medical advice. But the infrared light therapy is tremendous. And again, I would suggest you go to drsaputo.com and enter into that, into the search box, infrared light therapy, and then learn about what it will do for you, and then see if you can find a local practitioner who can do this for you. Because I'll bet there's somebody in New Jersey, you always have to bet, that does that. Certainly there'd be somebody in New York that does it.
I just want to throw out, too, you might want to try wearing a copper bracelet for your wrist.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. you know, the magnets and copper and homeopathics all could do some amazing things. So that's where we are. So that's I hope that helps you, Cassandra.
Pam.
Pam, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's Pam. I thought I was talking to Cassandra again. All right, you have a great day, and thanks for being such an avid fan. All right, we're at the end of our show here. I want to thank you for joining us and remind you that we're on every Monday, and we'd like to let you know that we take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and 10 to 11 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be archived on DrSaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics that we discussed, go to DrSaputo.com and check out our fast-track videos located on DrSaputo.com under Radio. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next Monday.